This is the Truth Barrel. The temperature is 220 degrees. And the rule is brutal honesty. There's nowhere to hide as guests sweat out the truth to a better life. Welcome to the Truth Barrel with your hosts, WBVL Kills Leader from 1993 through 1996, Gabrielle Riss, and best-selling author Neil Strauss, who alongside Jack Black featured in Beck's music video for Sex Laws. Coming up on the Truth Barrel.
So we'd be like,
we're the original zombies.
We started to kill animals, and we probably started by scavenging them, like warding off predators, and then we could break, using stone tools, we could break open the skull cavity and the bones and eat the marrow. So that was food that was just being left there by other animals that couldn't get at it. So probably
started. Oh, interesting. Welcome to a different Truth Barrel, because our...
This is a borrowed Truth Barrel.
Ours had a wardrobe malfunction, so we're down now in Chris Chelios's NHL Legends Truth Barrel, and we're literally right on the ocean, so our cold bath, our ice bath, is actually going to be...
The sea.
The sea.
And apparently, Chelios's barrel sounds better than our barrel.
Our engineer says it has better acoustics.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
Yes, whatever. So, we're also here, and I'm excited for this podcast. It's something I've been... texted Gabby and said we kind of had to do this, which is we're here with John Durant, who is famous for his best-selling book, The Paleo Manifesto, which really is like a great guide, not just to what to do, but why to do it, you know, why it's important. It's not just sort of a plan. It's an argument, in a sense, and a scientifically supported one.
And it's not a diet book.
Right.
Like, people have had enough diet books where there's a list of foods that you can and can't eat, and it becomes a religion. And so this is more a framework, and goes beyond the Paleolithic before now.
It's a philosophy.
Yeah.
It's a philosophy. Would you see it as a sort of a life philosophy more than anything else?
Yeah, I mean, evolution informs how you think about human nature. And, I mean, human nature is everything.
And
platform onto anything.
And I'm excited, John, have John on. I was going to say this before John came in the Truth Barrel, kind of.
Oh, we should have kept him out and then talked, but then he
I'll tell
outside.
You exactly what I was going to say, which is, like, I met John through our friend Rick.
Rick
is the hub.
The most non-social hub I've ever met, Rick Rubin.
and I knew of John's background in the paleo world. Mm-hmm. And then I started noticing, like, other parts of John's personality outside of that. And it made me fascinated with John sort of as a person. And what I love about the Truth Barrel is it's a place where maybe I can have a forum to ask the questions.
You finally get to ask, Neil.
I finally get to ask.
Because Neil, you know, he waits. Like, we've had other guests where he knows them and he needs to ask them stuff, but he didn't. But then once they get here, then he does.
Then he screams the questions. Yeah. I'm ready for the psychoanalysis.
Yeah.
I know.
See, he knows.
I know your MO.
He knows.
Tell me about your parents.
Yeah, exactly. That'll come later. First we got to set up all the dysfunction in your life, and then we get to the parents.
Right, and then we get to the good stuff. If you hear a loud noise, I'm just going to mess around with the door for a second.
Great.
There we go.
So let's sort of like contextualize just a little bit, which is, you know... tell me sort of a little bit just about how you schedule and how you organize your life now.
Yeah. You know, I try to get to bed between... I mean, concretely...
The schedule. That'd be great.
Yeah, the schedule. Yeah. So I try to get to bed between 10 and 11, wake up between 6 and 7:30.
Can we... Before you go there, see, this is an important thing. We talk about this in my house a lot. Do you believe that, you know, that we sort of, there's been discussions that because of your cortisol levels, that every hour before midnight is sort of valuable 2 hours to every hour of sleep after? Because people go, well, I get 8 hours, I just go to bed at 1 and get up at 9.
Yeah.
But that's not the case.
Yeah, circadian rhythm is everything. And if you don't have that dialed in, you'll just wake up feeling lousy. And when I was writing my first book, I got into a habit where I was going to bed at 4 a.m. and waking up at 10 or 11.
Writing the book about being healthy.
Yeah. Writing a health book was the worst thing I've ever done for my health, period.
Yeah.
I mean, I've mentioned this here and there. Most people don't know it. Like, I started smoking a few cigarettes when I was writing my health book, and I'd be walking down the street in New York. I'd have like 3 or 4 a day halfway through the book, which is not good. Not good. And I'd be walking down the street, and my CrossFit coach would like walk by, and he's like, dude, what the fuck are you doing?
Right.
Like,
what was it? Was it stress management?
It was stress. I didn't know how to write a book.
And then also, I mean, I'll agree with that. I did the game where I learned all these social skills, and then I lost them, you know, half of them while holding up to write the book, because doing a book, if you're really...
You're talking about it, you're not living it.
Well, it's not that you're talking about you're not living it. The demands of a book, like somebody directing a movie or anything else, are so great on your time that your life falls out of balance.
Well, and you're a writer, and imagine John's taking on this on as sort of a new project. I mean, a new career.
There's an extra layer of stress for John.
Okay, so I just wanted to, really, because this is important for people who are listening. Sleep is paramount, and when you sleep is paramount. So I didn't mean to cut you off, but it really does make a difference.
And Rick introduced me to the chili pad, which I love.
Yes, we have Laird swears by it. Wow.
I've had it for about 2 weeks. I'm definitely sleeping deeper. It's great.
So, and that's putting that pad under your bed.
Yeah, it's this thin pad that you put over your mattress under the fitted sheet that has a little bit of water flowing through it. You don't feel the water, and then it can be very cool or warm.
You can
warm.
Even make it warm.
Yeah.
So we have one, and I kind of run, you know, I need more warmth than Laird does. So we have it on half the bed, and he swears by it, and he feels like he always likes to make everything back to, like, well, before, if we slept on the ground, it would be cool.
Right.
And then you would cover yourself with something warm.
Right. That's John's bag, too.
Well, you know, circadian rhythm has multiple factors, right? So it's light. Everybody knows light. Temperature is the next most important one. Activity and movement during the day. If anybody goes camping, right, you immediately, your circadian rhythm starts to get into sync again. Mm-hmm. And what happens is you're moving more during the day. It gets dark when it's supposed to get dark.
Right. You're not artificial light.
Right. And you sort of wind down. You eat around the fire. You socialize a little bit. And then you go to sleep. And everybody's like, wait, it's 8:30?
Yeah.
I'm already tired. And you go to sleep. It's getting cool. And then in the morning, it's getting brighter. It's getting warmer. You start to hear voices. You start to smell food. And all of those things factor into, like, our biological alarm clock.
And so,
just this, like, blaring noise at a certain time.
And so what you're saying is just like the light and dark rhythm that we should sort of be waking with, the temperature rhythm of getting cooler at night and warmer in the afternoon.
So eventually, I mean, you can basically do a lot of this now. You can program your lights with, like, hue or something like that to shift to the red part of the spectrum at night. You can program something like Nest to change the temperature in your room, and then also to change, you know, something like the chili pad for temperature. And then you got to deal with electronic devices and stuff like that. But, like, we're getting to a point, I hope, in the next 5 to 10 years, where you can basically program your biological alarm clock to go to bed and then to wake up.
I do find it fascinating that we're using now technology to try to get us back to nature or natural way of living.
Right. Yeah.
It drives me nuts, but I also understand that it's sort of maybe the only solution, because we're not going to fight technology. It's not going away.
Right.
My kids are not going to give up their devices. So these are ways that we're adapting.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, yes, water is free in a stream, but I don't go to a stream and drink out of it. Yes, I drink it out of the tap and yada, yada, yada.
So. And what about, I think you guys have that machine in your house, and Darren does, the one that pulls the moisture out of the air.
It's tough when you live in California, though, because it's a little bit drier place. But it basically is a dehumidifier, but with filters, and it filters the water and it pulls it out. So we have one on Kauai where it's very, there's a lot of moisture in the air.
Yeah.
And it provides drinking water.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
How much do you get in Malibu?
You know, not much.
Right.
We sometimes have to supplement, I won't lie, and it filters it anyway.
Right.
But it, truth be told.
I want to get that dew point, DEWPOINT.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, we cut you off.
It's a good discussion. But let me ask you a quick question on the temperature thing, which is also there should be seasonal temperatures. Should there be seasonal temperatures we're living with?
All sorts of cycles. I mean, it's 24-hour cycles, it's seasonal cycles, and then just intermittent ones where you work out really hard and then you jump in the ocean, or you have to be exposed to the cold for a while.
Right.
I mean, we need all those cycles.
So I think we got to just you going to sleep. So let's pick up in the morning.
It's going to be a 4-hour podcast.
Exactly.
Sorry. Good. You have no idea.
I'll be very dehydrated by the end. Right.
Yeah.
The underant died. The truth barrel.
It's too intense. He sweated all the truth out.
Yeah.
That's right.
My mornings haven't been very good recently. I've been waking up to natural light, which is good because I don't have a hard start to the day where I have to be in an office or something. But too often I grab my phone is the first thing I do. And we were talking about this, you know, before getting into the sauna, but frequently I would check Twitter and it would just put me in the wrong mood for the entire day.
Let me give you a great tool. I love this. It's called Kitchen Safe, and it's for people who are bad dieters. And Kitchen Safe, you can put some food in there you don't want to eat and put it on a clock. Like those Oreos, you want to treat yourself to an Oreo at, you know,
I love this.
Six, so I put my phone in there.
Oh, I love it.
Shut
and
up.
I love it. Safe.
I just learned this about you.
Yeah.
You guys are crazy.
Yeah.
And a cookie?
Well, here's the, it's, yeah, and a cookie.
No, don't buy one. Don't buy one.
And, no, you, my whole idea is where willpower fails, you set systems to prevent you from your lowest self. Where willpower fails,
we
create something
to.
That's infallible.
So in one of the chapters in my book, I go to the Cleveland Zoo to learn how they keep gorillas healthy in captivity. And people don't really realize this, but a ton of animals in zoos are obese and have chronic health conditions, the same ones that afflict all of us.
Oh, interesting.
And we don't, when they make changes.
How do you know when a rhino's obese, by the way?
This is part of the problem.
Right.
So one of the women that I met with, her dissertation was on the body mass, constructing the first body mass index for Western lowland gorillas.
Right.
Because you would compare their weights to other gorillas in other zoos, and guess what? They were all overweight. You have to compare them to gorillas in the wild. But then, like, you can't just do a simple height measurement, you know, because males and females are such different sizes, and they've got the distended gut, and it's just not as simple.
Right. Like, we're so unhealthy in America, even our animals are obese.
Even our animals.
Right.
And it's true with lab animals, dogs, cats, everything.
Wow.
The whole deal. But with zoos, we don't expect the animals to have willpower and discipline. We just change the habitat, and guess what? They get healthier. Mm. So initially, when animals were put in captivity, they died. They had shorter lifespans than they did in the wild. And a lot of that was due to disease. They were dropping dead. They were getting infected with something, and there weren't antibiotics. And back then, I mean, we didn't discover the germ theory of disease until the late 19th century. So, like, these animals in royal menageries and stuff like that would die much earlier. Then there was a phase, you know, where sort of science and industry rose up. They started constructing the cells out of things that could be sterilized, and they looked like jail cells. So it's concrete, it's glass, it's steel, it's metal. And so we look at that now and we think, oh my gosh, so barbaric. But at the time, that was an improvement because that was the stuff that could be sterilized. So they stopped dying of disease all the time. Again, parallels to, you know, human existence in civilization. They stopped dying of disease all the time, and they start to feed them things like monkey, you know, they shift from whatever's available, like bread and candy and alcohol. They'd feed alcohol to the animals as like a treat. You know, it's a parallel to human health and how we ourselves living in civilization have initially had shorter lifespans. Then we figured out infectious disease. We start living a lot longer, but now we're beset by all these chronic health conditions, and what we have to do is change our habitat.
Right.
To that, we need to look at the wild.
Got it. Okay.
Good.
I see.
Okay.
I see the
now,
point.
Let's get back to his day.
Yeah.
And
so,
by the
so
way,
now
before you do that, you have seen, I love to watch animals eat fermented fruit in the wild. You know that time of year that the certain fruits fall.
Yeah.
And they're all just completely drunk.
Yeah.
You've ever seen that, Neil? It's genius.
Yeah.
Love it.
In fact, in St. Kitts, where I have like my second citizenship in case I have to leave when the shit hits the fan of America.
Because you fit right in.
Exactly. They'll never know. The monkeys are famous for stealing everyone's cocktails and getting just wasted.
Yeah. But there is a time in nature that the fruit falls from the tree, it's fermented, and all the animals...
Party.
It's good, yeah.
But just to your point, I do think it's true. So if there's sort of a takeaway advice for people listening, it's like change your habitat,
change your
environment.
And change that both
where you're... And that's on maybe three levels of A, just your home and your environment, B, just where you're living, the community you're living, and C, maybe the people you're around.
C is a big one. Because I think that ultimately we found, because we are social creatures, that your community is really the way to be successful.
Yep, totally. And sleep is a great example where discipline and willpower doesn't get you very far. You're unconscious, right?
Yeah.
So you need to just physically set up your sleeping environment so that it works.
And how many hours of your life is that? You might as well optimize it. That's so much time.
Right. And you can do it in a day or two.
Yeah.
That's all it takes.
And it's funny, as you were going on this long zoology digression, I was, which is very relevant and pertinent.
I love zoos.
Gabby's giving me this look. She's like, here
we
Neil
do this
goes.
All the time.
Right.
Neil's like, get to the point. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
So I was...
We can't all speak as fast as you, Neil.
It's true. So our mutual friend, Rick Rubin, the great producer, who we mentioned at the top of this podcast, he used to be... just overweight, never moved. Like the image of him was just sitting in his place in Hollywood, shades on, and this kind of big belly.
When he slept all day,
yeah,
he was awake all night.
And as soon as he moved to Malibu, just moving somewhere anywhere, great just into a a place where healthier with nature and opening up the letting sunlight into his place, like everything just changed. It was the biggest lifestyle change, was just changing his habitat like that, letting light in, moving to a place that's got nature around, all that. So what you're saying is really relevant.
And I had to leave New York City after 10 years. Yeah. That really was like living in a cave.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's much better out here. It gets sunshine.
No, it's true. I mean, I noticed in New York, people will get so angry. They'll get angry at the city. People will be like, hit a wall of a building and say, fuck this city. I don't see people. I guess people get angry at traffic here, so you don't see it happening. Which is not a natural habitat. Maybe we should get into that. So you wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
You try not to check your phone, but you do anyway. What happens next?
Yeah. And
you get fired up. You've got both spectrums, fired up. Right? You can see it. You can get fired up. We can see it.
And those are the perfect people to write these books. Hell speaking for myself, is because you understand the struggle.
Yeah. Right. I've never tried to portray myself as perfect in this stuff. And people kind of expect me to be this incredible athlete and like perfect whatever. And I'm like, I wrote a book on it and I look like a fucking caveman. All right? Like, give me a break.
Right.
You know, let me do the one thing well. Right.
And John does look kind of like a caveman, just to sort of, because people are watching. Very hairy chest. We can only say this in the truth. Very hairy chest. I don't know about your back. Is there hair going on?
Oh, there's hair on the back.
So you don't do not shave it for paleo reasons?
Occasionally, I'll, you know, me or my roommate will take a beard trimmer to it. More of a weed whacker.
Right, so furry lovers out there, John's website is huntergather.com. Also, he's got, kind of long stringy hair.
I am single.
Yeah. Okay, ladies.
I am single.
Yeah, and he's looking for, we're going to get into this later, but he's looking for a serious relationship. His ways of, his game days are behind him.
Did you have game days?
I mean, not quite as extensive as yours, but I definitely was more short-term focused in New York.
Oh, that's a nice way to put it. I like that.
Yeah.
Short-term focused.
Hey, guess what? There's a place in your life for that.
Amen.
Yeah.
Don't be long-term focused too easy. Have some freaking fun.
I agree with that. Yeah.
And then also, so you got the beard. You really do look like, you could be cast.
So I back before the book came out, I got to appear on Colbert, which was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that interview, there's a really funny part where he's like, what's your ideal woman? And I'm like, well, eats meat, not a vegetarian, lactose intolerant, no dairy, and has celiac, like no gluten, no grain. And, who would ever have those be the characteristics
that
they
look for? Off the hook.
And so he goes, ladies, if you can't digest modern foods, this is your caveman. And then they flash my website up there.
No way.
Genius.
And I got about 100 emails from lactose intolerant celiac women from all over the country.
And it was like a party in your life for a while.
There were, I'd say probably a third attached photos to the emails. Two fathers sent me contact information for their daughters. But I started dating someone that night. I met someone that night and we started dating.
Because you were on the Colbert show. You were big time.
Yeah, she was the waitress at the restaurant we went to after.
And you were all fired up.
She was
Native
American. I was so excited. Right. This is
you're going back now.
Yeah, this is part of the aesthetic.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're on fire, you're celebrating yourself, you're feeling good. Putting out that energy.
That's right. She's like, there was great energy at the table and everybody was laughing. So I was like,
she met you before the show when you're all nervous.
It never happened. You would have never gotten the number. I'd have been like, this guy's a mess.
Totally true.
Total wreck.
So,
but what was nice, my ego aside on those emails from the young ladies, what was really nice is all of them were like, I always viewed these aspects of myself as a defect and as if I was broken. And you reframed it as a positive characteristic. And so that was what was really cool about
it. So when you think about it, the show reaches 12 million just for 100 people to email is not that. Just kidding. Just
the low percentage. There was also an age bracket.
Remember, they have to be lactose intolerant celiacs.
Okay, fine. So you wake up in the morning.
Like but dark it's great. Skin and light eyes.
The structure for this episode will be John's day. By the time we get to when you get to the end of your day, that means the podcast will be over. We'll go on these great digressions.
Yeah.
So you wake up in the morning, you don't check your phone.
I'm supposed to not check my phone.
Right, but you do sometimes.
So I'm on that. I will sometimes send some emails from bed.
And here's why, here's one of the reasons I really strongly believe this is like you get this choice, is your day going to be reactive or proactive?
Yes.
If you're reactive, you're on everyone else's agenda. If it's proactive, you're on your own agenda. And so I actually change my schedule where I go to bed at 9:30 every night, wake up at 5:30.
Yep.
And I get my writing done first thing. I don't even check anything. My computer's offline. My phone's not reachable. And I get my work done and then I'm just present for everything else.
That's great. So I do that. I wake up, I will.
We got to the wake up part already.
Oh, right, sorry.
Emails we'll from bed. Emails from bed.
I'll try to move. I'll either go to the gym that's in my apartment complex.
Those are tough to go to.
So you don't shower, brush.
Yeah,
your
but
teeth.
It's physically close, and sometimes that's important.
So there's no showering going on because you're doing the caveman thing.
Straight no, to the gym. Not first thing.
Straight to the gym. Okay.
Shower after.
Okay.
Yeah.
Checking.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Then I will walk into
and
my
what do you do in the gym? Do you like just use weights or do you have special?
Well, he likes CrossFit.
Yeah, so if I do CrossFit, I'll do whatever's right. going on there. If I'm doing my own thing, you know, it'll be like an adapted CrossFit workout. I'll do some squats. I'll do some thrusters. I'll do some push-ups. I'll go running and I'll mix in some burpees every half mile or something like that. Work up a sweat. I'd like to find things that are more fun to do.
Right. Burpees are actually an ancient paleo tradition.
That's right.
grabbing the seed off the ground or
well,
whatever.
Well, it's painted on the cave.
Yeah, exactly. In instructional manual. So, but for real, one thing I love about moving out here is some of our mutual friends have these workouts. For example, this beach that we're looking at right now, we drag a log along the beach. We kind of lift and roll tires. So it just feels good because after a while for me being in a gym, I just think I'm standing here under halogen lights moving things up and down. This is stupid.
It is. And a lot of times it is stupid. Those machines, has nothing to do with functional movement. And if he's talking about going back to nature and how we are, you got to move your body.
Right. So what would your ideal workout be?
I wish there were accuracy games where I could throw stuff in a gym.
Yes.
Like, why?
Is that when our brain really developed, right? When we could throw and hit something because then we could eat something like that and then our brains got bigger. Isn't that right?
That might be we started to kill animals and we probably started by scavenging them, like warding off predators. And then we could break, using stone tools, we could break open the skull cavity and the bones and eat the marrow. So that was food that was just being left there by other animals that couldn't get at it. So it probably started.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting.
So we'd be like, we're the original zombies.
Yeah.
Like, zombies are these, like, kind of dumb humanoid things that are sort of learning how to walk, and they eat brains.
Right.
That was us.
No way. There's an origin to all these myths. That's amazing. So, like, brains. Like, the lion's gone away. Yeah. We get the brains.
Right. And the Yeti and the Sasquatch, that's
the
Neanderthals.
Right. How amazing.
Right. And rabies led to werewolves and vampires, because there's bats that would bite and dogs that would bite. So that's werewolves and vampires.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You guys have a lot of time on your hands.
Oh, man. Yeah. I read this amazing book on
Knowledge
rabies.
Knowledge is amazing.
It was great on rabies. Do you know some of the symptoms of rabies? Aside from aggression and wanting to bite things. So one is hydrophobia. You become really afraid of water.
Really?
And people
Why?
Get thirsty.
Will it help you or something? So it wants the you know.
It's unclear. Like, these microorganisms will...
But that's what I mean. The microorganism will somehow, the water...
It wants to survive. So.
Yeah, so they send those telepathic messages to the brain, like, don't do that or do this, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, whatever... There's some flip, some switch in the brain. It hits it. Fear
of
water.
That's interesting. By the way, a quick digression. I just had this epiphany as you were speaking, which is, how often do we do that with our bad behaviors and habits? We avoid the things that are going to help us because those habits are trying to reinforce themselves.
But John can tell you, like, especially certain foods, the sugar or the things that keep some of these microorganisms is the sugar.
Right.
And so it's always telling your brain, eat that, because that's what's feeding it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so go ahead.
And, like, for men in particular, like, an insatiable sexual appetite and, like, an erection that won't go away.
That
won't go away.
With rabies? Rabies was the original Viagra.
And
honey, it'll be worth it, I promise.
They have reports of people with rabies with an erection that won't go away for, like, days. And, like, orgasming, like, coming, like, I don't know, 12 times a day.
That's funny,
because
Tommy Lee, when I did the Motley Crue book, was telling me that he, this is a direct parallel, was telling me how they had a contest to see how many days they could go without showering and how many women they could have sex with in that time.
Oh my God.
It was something like 23 days and like 60
You're
women.
Joking,
so
right?
they might have rabies.
They were afraid of water, the shower.
Right, exactly.
And afraid of water. Having sex and coming.
Exactly.
So what you're saying is rabies is like a hair band rock star.
That's
pretty
it.
Much.
Yeah, done.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
That is amazing, though.
Yeah.
So if you could design your ultimate workout, if you could do, like, the ultimate workout, or maybe is there a paleo gym? You have this. So John also has this thing called Wild Ventures. Mm-hmm. Him, Mark Sisson, some other great people.
I love Mark Sisson.
And they invest in Thrive Market and a lot of kind of vent, like a. Go ahead.
He might marry a vegetarian. Look at Mark.
I know. But that was before Mark was Mark. I'm not going to comment.
All right.
We love Karen.
So if you fell
she's
in love.
Amazing.
Oh, I know, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, so I know. You, so you, I know.
So if you fell
in love. Damn it.
It'll be God's joke on you.
I know. I've so dated. The last young lady I dated went vegan on me. That was rough.
That's like, so if you fell in love and they were a vegetarian, it's just a deal breaker?
No. He's evolving past that.
Yeah.
So here's a story for you. The intersection of the dating world and the food.
Okay.
I was seeing a young lady years ago. I was 26, so 7 years ago. She was 19. We had met like three weeks ago. She was foreign, you know, so she was on her own. She was more independent.
Mature. He's trying to say 19.
I thought he was going to say vulnerable versus independent, but go ahead.
She didn't know the language.
And she ate sort of like most 19-year-olds eat, so it was like pizza and Sprite and stuff like that.
But she was hot.
Yes.
You guys cut the shit, all both of you. You guys can go on and on, but when it comes to you're like, paleo, but hotness, I don't know, you know.
No, it wasn't like
John's got the vegetarian hot matrix.
We're walking down the street, and she gives me these big eyes, and she looks over and she says, if I still eat the way that I do a couple years from now, are we going to be going out? And she's got a huge chest and big
eyes. You're like,
eyes,
as long as it doesn't
so
affect
sweet.
Your figure.
And like, I guarantee you 99 guys out of 100 would have been like, oh yeah, baby. Like, what? And you know, I thought about it for a second and I paused and I said no. And she was shocked.
You didn't do it just to keep her on her toes?
No. Okay. No. I mean, you knew that she had the effect.
You knew she was looking for kind of a daddy.
What is it?
Daddy. What's that?
Treat him mean, keep him teen, or whatever.
It's weird. I was reading like
women these days.
Reading the Grail romances from, you know, Chrétien de Troyes, so the original, you know, 13th century stuff, and they have this. They say the same thing in there. Like, it's crazy. Like, it's,
what do you mean?
They literally say, and this is the code of chivalry, was, you know, men know that if you compliment someone, they will not be cool with you, but, you know, the meaner you are, the more they like you. It's crazy. I'm like, fuck, that was like the negs in the games. Not saying it's
okay,
I'm
going
to
interject
right.
something and go then ahead. We're going to let John continue.
Okay, I just found it fascinating.
I'm going to tell you as a grown
by the
woman,
way, you're the one who started this. I want to point out, you started this discussion by saying treat him mean, keep him keen.
I know. Well,
so you started it, so you
I'm
can
just
end
saying,
it.
But I want to inject another little element to this. I'm going to use Laird as an example because he's the only guy I've ever been married to. He has the art of clearly having a voice, and it can be a little scary and like you're not sure what you're going to get a little bit, but he treats me, you've seen it.
Yeah.
He treats me better than anybody. However, I just know not to screw with him. So gentlemen, as you're maturing through age, maybe 30, let's say, ish, could be 35, could be 29. I think it's more about holding your ground and your belief system.
Right.
And then the woman understands, I'm not going to try to change that guy. I'm not going to try to manipulate that guy. And then the reason that the relationship will work is because the reciprocal upcycle of kindness.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That was a beautiful phrase.
Yeah, the reciprocal upcycle of kindness.
Gentlemen, after you get done with all the hootity-dootity, when you know you're in your 20s and early 30s, or in Neil's case, till you're 40 or whatever, just understand that and hold your ground. Because us girls are pushy and we like to mother
everybody.
That's
exactly what it is.
We mother everybody. And so like Laird says, if I changed really the ways that you thought you'd want me to change, you won't want to be with me anyway.
So, and that's what it is. It's about weakness versus strength. It's not about nice versus bad or any of that other shit.
Right.
And by the way, I didn't want a nice guy. Me personally, I had a great boy from Midwest. He said, I have a lot of great qualities, just not the ones you're interested in. So I think it's also understanding what you need to be your best self and be turned on and excited and stimulated and all these things.
Exactly.
Okay, go ahead, finish.
Well, you know, what I explained to her was, look, food is a very important part of who I am. It's part of my work. It's part of my life's mission. And like, I want to end up long-term with someone who supports the direction that I'm going. That makes it harder. And like, you can't force someone to change. They have to want to change if they change at all. And so, like, I wasn't going to force the way she, like, either she gravitates towards the direction that I'm going and we're potentially going or not.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Look at Neil. He's having a hard time with that one.
No, I'm just thinking. And again, I want to get on to like we're at like 8 a.m. on John's day or something. But I do want to make the point that I'm just thinking that I feel like it gets to be a slippery slope because I know a lot of people who want to break up with their girlfriends or wives. Cause like I like this and they like that other thing, and I feel like those differences are awesome. And is it okay if it's a core difference of something you love? It's just a behavior. It's not who somebody is. It's just a behavior or a habit. And but it becomes, and I don't know.
It does become, let's say, a value system. So what I think is that if your value system is similar enough, how you think about money, how you treat people, certain things, how you get there is up to you. I think that can be as different as day and night. But I do think kind of fundamentally, because when you're getting into the thick of it and you're in the woods, the thing that can really help you connect is that you sort of see eye to eye on some of those very big things. And food and eating, and by the way, that's his work and his mission.
Right.
That's his mission.
Doesn't matter. I say this. Can I respect and love you even though your value system is different? And that's a thing for humanity, right? Like, that's a thing for humanity.
You're talking about a relationship and a marriage, not your neighbor. That's what happens outside your house, Neil.
But what about her values? What about the way she's different? It's like, sort of like, okay, I need you to be in line with my...
No, he's not saying she had to line up with him. He's saying what he needs. He's being clear about what he needs, and that girl has to be clear about what she needs.
So
I'm clear about what I need.
Right. And I totally believe that you could fall in love with someone, have an amazing relationship, even if their diet was different than yours, even though you're...
But it's different in John's case because it's part of his work and his message.
It's his work. It's his work, and it has nothing to do with that. Nothing. Your work, your message, your thing is different. I think love and the affairs of the heart and that connection transcends that stuff. Do I care if Ingrid doesn't read my book? Do I care if she doesn't agree with my ideas?
Can I say something?
Yeah.
He just expressed to you what he felt.
Right.
So he's got to honor his feelings. And in other cases, you could be 100% right.
And my job...
is to change how we feel.
No, my job in the truth barrel, and everybody's job, and my job, and they just bump fists, my job is this. A real friend is going to say, I'm hearing that, it doesn't make sense, and I'm going to challenge that. And all I'm doing is... All I'm doing is challenging it. I'm not asking to change it.
I appreciate that.
And maybe through that challenge, there's growth opportunity, or maybe he just keeps doing what he's doing. But I'm just challenging him. That's my job.
But also, what about if we're also encouraging people to find their truth, their voice, and be honest about that, and then live according to that as well?
You will never find your truth in a vacuum, because you are too close to yourself to see yourself clearly at all. And by getting some reflections back from other people, you get to have some ideas. Oh, here are other ways of doing it. Here are other ideas on that. We're too close to ourselves to see ourselves that clearly. You cannot find it in a vacuum.
But when you're too flexible, like there's a danger of becoming too flexible.
Well, that's having no boundaries.
Where you accommodate other people to the point where you don't have a clear shape.
Right, and it's just as bad as being inflexible. Same thing. Being having no boundaries is the same as being inflexible.
Okay, I'm going to give you an abstract idea. Let's say Laird and I were in conflict, right? And I'm going to just say something that through the years, one of the things that has worked very well for me with him is that when it gets really heavy and it's hard between us, really hard, he's more steady, he's more solid,
right.
He's more there for me. That is important for me. To me, if I was with a guy that then when it got really heavy, he was skittish and he became a victim and it was weird, I don't know that I could do it, and I don't think that's operating.
And that's
vacuum.
Not what I'm saying at all. But Laird changes, he grows, he learns new things. That's the process of life. I'm not saying just listen to what everybody says, and I'm not telling anyone what to do.
Right.
This is what I'm saying. If you're in love, you're married. Let's say John married his high school sweetheart when he was 17, right? And now he discovers the paleo thing.
But
and
that's
now,
different.
Wait, just hear me out.
That's different.
Just hear me out.
He's a single guy.
But just. What I'm saying is this. Anybody at any point, you can marry. You can find someone who has those exact dietary things you believe totally. And later, you're going to grow and your beliefs are going to change. How old are you now?
33.
So if you married, it could be a 50-year relationship. I guarantee that the way you think is going to change in those 50 years.
Yes.
What if her way doesn't change with you? Do you just get rid of her and find someone who matches your new values? That's what I'm saying. We're so quick to discard someone because they don't agree with something.
Well, I don't disagree with that part of what you're saying. But I think it's also okay to own at least where you are in your life to go, these things feel important to me.
And?
Yeah, like and, I don't have a laundry list of 80 bullets that somebody
but
has to check off.
I get what you're saying.
Oh, no, I'm not. I think but anytime somebody says I have these criteria for someone, I think it's trying to impose a plan on nature. You know, it's just, it's nice to have, but let be open to whatever may happen.
Yeah, see, but when you're open to whatever may happen, I think we get driven by lust too much.
No, it's true. In fact,
and the boys are like, ho, ho, ho. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not in on that joke. What do you mean?
Right.
Look at, they're like, yeah, ho, ho, ho. Which means any hot vegan can get in his pants, is what he's trying to say.
Exactly.
So on my Tinder profile, my Tinder profile, I say no vegans, no vegetarians.
Right.
And you'd be shocked by how many vegans or vegetarians.
Of course. It's a challenge.
Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's a challenge.
They're like, it's like I tell my single guy friends that like they want to get lucky. I'm like, just tell them you're abstinent. You will get laid so quick. No, I'm just, you know, I'm waiting. I'm saving it for the right person. I've had enough for now. And the girls are like, oh, I'm going to change your mind. I'm the one. You know?
Yep.
Okay, so it's what, 10 a.m. now?
So basically, if you're vegan or vegetarian, email John Durant.
Right away.
Because
right now I'm abstinent. And
it's a challenge.
Yeah. And even though he probably would think you're attractive, he's just going to save it.
All right. So let's get back to your day.
10 a.m.
So you've gone to the gym now. You've done your very unnatural type of workout.
But I like how you talked about the skill workout because, again, that's going back. Our movement and the things we did that were active were also with purpose.
Right. And skills engage the mind. Like, we wonder why we're bored. And play is skill development. And you know, and that's why sports are fun in part, is because there's skills involved.
So why
don't gyms have any skill-based activities?
Right, so what else would you do? You have the throwing and aiming. What else would you do?
You know, I'd have like a series of missions that you could like accomplish.
Like treasure hunting kind of thing?
Or? Yeah.
Sure. Like what kind of missions? What a couple?
I mean, you could basically, like doing a Spartan race is basically a mission. And if you had one gym with like a big outdoor area, you could construct a bunch of different things that you need to accomplish to get to the next level. Yeah. You need to hit this target 5 times in a row without missing.
We're actually building.
You need
at
to
our friend
swing on a rope and get this distance.
Yes, I would
or
do that every day.
Your distance. I would do that every
We're
day.
Building at our friend Darren's place an obstacle course.
Yeah, which is genius.
As soon as he gets back into town.
Yeah. You need to, you need to deadlift this irregular rock, you know, of a certain
play
weight.
Play and movement. With a task and an accomplishment. I think it's so good.
Yeah. I've heard people talk about this, but real estate's so expensive in the big cities where a lot of people would be into this.
And they need it more actually than anybody.
Yeah.
The people who are by all the buildings in these concrete jungles, they need it the most.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, and it's funny because they have the NerdStrong gyms. Do you know about these? Where they do it's like NerdStrong, and they have like superhero and like cartoon character and video game themed workouts.
Totally.
That are kind of fantasy based, but there's no reality based workouts.
Totally.
I'm sure there are. Someone might, I'd love to know about them. Great.
I mean, in Spartan Fit, in this second book that I co-authored, you know, we came up with these Spartan elite modes that were based on like different Greek myths. And so doing something blindfolded, you know, or add you know, more difficult grip or in the cold or things like that. We just tied it to different
things. Awesome. What are a few really good ones? I love these.
So we did, there were 12 of them. Hercules mode was anything with more challenging grip. So, you know, throwing a t-shirt over a pull-up bar or lifting weights that were irregular sizes.
Uh-huh.
Hoplite mode was anything with a weight vest or carrying extra weight. Any workout you do. Icarus was at high altitude. Blindfolded was I was going to say Oedipus. We decided Oedipus wasn't the right one to go with.
Where do you go from there?
Yeah. Murder family members, sleep with them. Yeah, that's Homer.
Right. Homer. You can do Tiresias.
Oh,
what Tiresias is in the Odyssey. He goes to the land of the dead to meet Tiresias, the blind seer.
Oh, cool.
Odysseus does.
Great, great.
There you go.
So, you know, there's this great story in, I forget which author, you know, contemporary author wrote about it back in the day, but there was a challenge in the Agoge that the boys had to do where they would have to run like 6 or 7 miles with a mouthful of water.
And only breathe through
only
the
breathe
nose?
Through their nose.
Wow. And then not swallow. That's unbelievable.
That's right. That's right.
What?
So we started we're like, can you do that? Like, can you run 6 or 7 miles with a mouthful of water? So I when I read this, I was like, oh shit, I gotta do this. So I went out and I ran 3 miles with it.
Come on.
Was the hardest 3 miles I've ever run in my life.
Tell me the impulses. Like, you're like, I mean, was it harder about not getting your breath or wanting not to swallow?
It was the mental challenge. It made an easy run the most mentally difficult run I've ever done. Because it was 3 miles. I wasn't even going that fast, but just like the impulse to spit it out. It was short enough and I was breathing enough through my nose that I didn't feel oxygen deprived.
Mm-hmm.
But just, you know, the mental, like, it felt like I was at the end of a 10-mile run, mentally.
Wow.
That is cool.
Great stuff. Any other good ones?
Let's see. What
You'd be
let's
fun
see.
To hang out with, John.
Yeah. All things are possible. Yeah, exactly. We could do this again. I mean, I feel like, since we're in the auxiliary sauna, I feel like I am owed a trip to the real sauna at
yes,
some point.
That is yes, true.
And so, you can come do pool training in ice.
Oh, I'd love to do that. Yeah. I would love to do that.
In fact, one thing that we want to add next year, or Laird wants to add next year, is doing sort of like mathematics and tying
in
knots.
He'd like you to make decisions
in cold
when you're cold.
Or underwater.
Like, here's a knot. Undo the knot.
Yeah.
In extreme cold, and you can't come out until it's done, and you know how to fix your decision making, and all. I mean, your heart rate goes up to whatever, 182, it's impossible to make good decisions and what have you.
Yeah, love it. Love it.
Go ahead.
There's cryothermo, so anything with hot and cold.
Right.
Zeus was anything in the rain. People don't want to go work out just because it's raining.
Right.
And you know, they get wet, and oh, my shoes are soggy, and whining starts. And when there is a feeling when you go do a run in the rain, you really do feel like some sort of superhero. You're on a mission. You're like, why am I doing this? Why? Right. It's raining out. Again, it's this weird psychological effect because people aren't used to.
I think it feeds your spirit. Like what you're saying, I think it feeds people. And again, going back to your point about the animals, connecting back to who we are. Mm-hmm. Is so essential,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Totally.
Yeah, these are great. So now you finished your workout.
Yeah.
I love these digressions. They're fascinating. They're really good. So you finished your workout.
Shower.
It's actually a great way to go. Yeah,
you shower. Shower.
Is there, okay, but
so
do you,
I usually don't use soap.
He doesn't have rabies.
Usually don't use soap.
Right. We can smell.
Oh my gosh.
Great.
Gabby thinks I'm mean to everybody, but you know, it's with love. It's with love.
Sometimes, yes. No, hey, listen,
it's always
I'll defend you, don't worry. Don't hit him, John.
It's all right.
So do you do cold showers?
So I usually start warm and then switch it to cold at the end.
And so you do, so you don't use soap, do you just sort of like stand up there and rub your body with your hands?
Or? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you just rub it.
And towel off, and then I spray myself with this bacteria spray called Mother Dirt, that has live bacteria that's good for replenishing your skin microbiome.
Oh, interesting. I don't know that.
Wow.
And usually that's great for the odor with me. Uh-huh. Like, it totally gets rid of the odor.
When you get nervous...
Really?
Yeah.
It's funny. When you get nervous, do you ever notice like a onset of, ooh? You know that, you know that nervous sweat?
Uh-huh.
I get it, and it's like way stronger than like regular sweat.
Yeah, I can smell, you know, my pheromones, hormones, whatever.
Yeah.
Totally.
And when people are in ketosis, too, they're a little more stinky, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And some people are, some people aren't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Just different.
But yeah, some people get bad breath.
And so how long do you do the cold afterward? And by the way, it really is the greatest thing, like, either I end my showers in cold, but you only shower in cold, right?
Oh, no.
No, you do.
I'm a lady.
Right.
I like my warm water, and then I'm starting to finish in cold, because obviously Laird's, you know, into it. But what is interesting, even when I go into the shower after my two youngest daughters, it's on the cold setting.
Nice.
They're doing it.
Oh, wow.
It feels so good. I'm so happy.
Well, the benefits are, close all your pores up, tighten it up, and then, 30 seconds, you can start having a hormonal response, right? Like,
I don't know. It's fast. All I know is...
Boost your testosterone and things like that.
Uh-huh. All I know is it's fast, and it cuts through whatever anxiety or stress I have, it just cuts right through it.
Right. Bad mood. What do we call that? The attitude adjuster.
Yeah. And then you get the Mother Dirt. There's a lot of things I'm going to buy after this podcast, by the way.
I know, right?
This is
great.
The
Mother Dirt.
Like I said, he'd
spray
be fun
that.
To hang out with.
Yeah. Spray that. I'm using all my good stuff. I'm really boring after about an hour. So then I either walk to work, or I've been learning how to ride the solo wheel. Have you seen
it?
Yeah,
it looks so fun. It looks so fun.
So it's, for people who haven't seen it, you can... You know, Google it. One wheel, kind of like a Segway, but it requires more balance and there's no handle. So I've been riding that. It goes about 10, 12 miles an hour. So that's been fun. That gets me into a flow state. I was actually working with an executive coach about improving my mornings. And I started talking about how much I was, how I immediately got into a flow state riding this thing. He's like, you need to do that in the morning.
Yeah.
Because it puts you in the right mood.
And you know what I love about what John's saying is that it isn't like I have this philosophy and only do things that keep with the philosophy. I'm also doing what just makes me feel good and feels right.
Right.
And that's what makes me trust you more as an expert than someone who's just dogmatic about one idea.
And
that's
well,
a
thank
great
you.
Stop.
Thank
Take
you.
That in, buddy. That's a big comment from you. But it's true. That's important.
Yeah.
You know, it's even when they talk about the gut, we got to listen to that thing.
Yeah.
Like, we see it, how it makes us feel. Why are we, like, when we always talk about the conditioning, sometimes we can talk ourselves right out of the thing that really is good for us.
Yeah. There's a great I just did this big piece on fear for Rolling Stone, and somebody's talking about conspiracy theories, that it brings order to a disordered universe.
Sure.
So be careful that your theory isn't something that's just, you know, not real, but just muting your anxiety about being in a disordered universe. Orderly universe. But things are out of your control. But I love that you do the solo wheel, and isn't like, I'm going to walk and I'm only going to do these things that were done by my ancestors.
Yeah, and even how I eat has evolved over the years. You know, I've been eating paleo-ish for 10 years.
Right.
And I've had periods where I was very strict and dogmatic, and I've had periods where, you know, I was eating some pizza. And, you know, not every day or anything like that, but I had periods where I was more relaxed. And, you know, it does change over time.
And how hard is the solo wheel to work? It looks...
It's not that hard.
It's not that
hard? My kids ride it.
If you skateboard, surf, ski, anything like that, it's pretty quick to pick up, like an hour or two to like basically be moving on it.
Great.
But it does take a couple weeks to start to get...
And then you guys haul ass.
You
so I walk or ride to work.
Right.
I'm working out of Thrive Market's office in Marina Del Rey. Which is, you know, you talked about earlier about changing the people that you're around. And it has been so good to have some structure in my life after 5 or 6 years of being an author and entrepreneur, working out of coffee shops, out of my home, out of co-working spaces, to have a routine. I've come back to the importance of routine and structure after like the complete opposite side. So I go in there, it's 170 people now, you know, great light, and I work there most of the day. I'm in there like 3 or 4 days a week.
And to speak to what you're saying, it's really true. I just like tweeted or whatever this article, but I thought it was interesting that all the greats had a routine. None of their routines were the same, but what they had in common is they all had a routine.
Yeah.
So don't you think it takes a minute?
It's
to construct something, to learn something, to know it takes a certain amount of repetition and discipline,
yes.
Right?
Yes, and there's a routine that works for one part of your life, might not work in a later part, and to not be afraid to change it. It's true. Actually, what I did, because it's so hard to change your routine, is I hired a friend of ours to come over and like keep my routine till I can get the habit formed.
The habit.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah. Should we do a quick...
Let's do a quick plunge.
So we'll pause the podcast now.
We've gotten through work 3 or 4 days a week.
What time are we at in the morning?
What were you saying? Lunch?
Yeah, we're basically at lunchtime.
We're lunchtime.
Okay, sounds like a good chance to take a dip.
Okay, so we'll plunge and then we'll just be right back and continue in a moment. This has been great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
This is the Truth Barrel with Gabrielle Reese and Neil Strauss.
So we are back from our dip in the cool, cool ocean,
it's
feeling
great.
Refreshed.
The sea is nothing like it.
It was nice. You know what? I think we got to do all our podcasts here.
Oh.
I mean, just running on the beach and jumping in the ocean, how John Durant was that of us?
It was.
This is going to require pioneering sound equipment.
Yeah. We were thinking if there's a sponsor who wants to create a waterproof,
heat-proof,
salt-proof wireless mic so we can keep you with us on the journey.
Help us out, will you?
Yeah.
Because there's a big need for that, I'm sure.
There is a need. Yeah. all the Truth Barrel imitators. So we were up to lunch, and what we're thinking is, why don't you just come back?
Yeah, because you've got a lot to think about already.
Right.
A lot of takeaways, a lot of fun thoughts.
Yeah, let's do it again.
We'll continue part two. We'll do the rest of your day. I want to get a little into your background and childhood.
You know that.
And I want to get a little bit into some of the discussions we've had offline.
What about Twitter?
Because I had real
you had strong opinions
with
issues.
John's Twitter feed, which he's now deleted.
Yeah, I'm now off Twitter for the time being. I've taken a break.
But he deleted all these.
You and Kim Kardashian.
That's right.
Who knows?
Yeah, but he deleted all your posts as well.
I did. I mean, people can find them if they want to find them.
Right.
It was more that, we'll have to get into it.
Yeah, I felt like there was some anger there.
Oh.
And we'll see you next week on the Truth Barrel.
Find new episodes of the Truth Barrel every Tuesday at podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe at iTunes.